armed forces of the Republic of Korea, buttressed by the United States, they are no match for that. And they understand that. And that's why this nuclear capability, which they will not give up, is their ticket to survival. So they're not going to give up those nuclear weapons. I think we need to talk to them, we need to have dialogue with them, but accept the fact that they are a nuclear power.
James Clapper, former Director of National Intelligence for Obama. We just have to live with it. North Korea is going to be a nuclear power, and there's no way to stop it. Joining us now, Pat Buchanan. And Pat, you're you remember when the going was good back in the 1950s, 1950, 51, 52.
The 40s weren't too bad either.
Yeah. Well, the Korean War was pretty rough, and Eisenhower ran for president in large part to end the war in Korea. And he left office as one of the most popular Republican presidents ever, and in large part because he brought peace to, peace to the United States. No one wanted to stay in that war. He got us out of that war, and that was a big part of the campaign, big part of his election appeal. And now it looks like, at least yesterday, we were edging closer to a war that would end in the deaths of perhaps millions of people.
Well, let me, I recall that very well. I was in the hospital, frankly, had a broken leg and was in traction and body cast for 3 months.
Wow.
And this was back in 1960 when the war began. And as I told folks, my mother would bring me newspapers and magazines every day because you're lying on your back in that hospital. And I said at one point I knew the battlefield better than MacArthur from just reading. But let me say this about Eisenhower. Truman left office as the least popular president almost in American history. And I came in and said he would go to Korea, which in effect meant he would end the war.
Right.
And it is said that Ike ended the war by giving a quiet threat that if the Chinese and the others did not conclude a truce or armistice along the DMZ where we were at that point, that he would take off limits on all weapons we used, which was a signal we might go to nuclear weapons. And China had none then, and of course North Korea had none then. And I think the Chinese, the Russians, and the North Koreans concluded they had bled America as much as they were going to be able to do. But you're exactly right. Eisenhower refused to intervene in Hungary during the revolution. I remember that very well. I was in college, and people were up in arms saying, do something about this horror that's going on. And Ike ended his administration as one of the most popular presidents in history. It was a time of peace and prosperity, and the 50s were, by and large, good times in America.
I thought after the president's comments yesterday that a lot of the neoconservatives would be pretty happy, because they always seem happy when we're off to war. I mean, they just seem like they're happy warriors, but most of them, with the exception of people like McCain, weren't actually in battle. But nevertheless, John McCain yesterday came out and criticized the president, in part saying this.
I don't believe that President Reagan or President Eisenhower or other presidents that I've admired would have said the same thing. They might have done as much as we could, but not that kind of rhetoric. I'm not sure how it helps.
What do you think's going on there, Pat?
Well, let me say this on the neocons and McCain. On this one, I do agree with McCain. Rare agreement with John on this one. I don't think the fire and fury statement added anything. But let me say this. The neocons, I don't think, are terribly excited about a war in Asia. Really, they got their gun sights right now. They're very anti-Russian, and they, of course, got their gun sights on Iran. And this would be if you get into a war in Korea, it could be a horrendous thing. And I don't think the neocons want that any more than anyone else does, to be candid. But I do think that you had somebody on, was it Clapper, saying that we're going to have to live with a nuclear North Korea. Well, remember Bush in 2002 in that dreadful speech, you know, the axis of evil said the world's worst nations are not going to be, or worst regimes are not going to be allowed to get the world's worst weapons. And North Korea proceeded to build and test a nuclear weapon. They are a nuclear power. They do have nuclear weapons. The question at issue is whether the United States is going to tolerate and live with the ability of the North Koreans to deliver a nuclear weapon on American territory, not just American territory like Guam, but the American homeland, Anchorage, Alaska, the west coast of the United States, Denver, and Chicago. And McMaster says Trump will not tolerate that, and that is utterly unacceptable. But I think North Korea has decided this, Laura, that the only way they can guarantee the Americans don't attack them and bring down their regime is if they have a nuclear deterrent. That Saddam didn't have one, and look what happened to him, and Gaddafi didn't have one, and look what happened to him. And so they are determined to build this deterrent, and I don't think, absent of military action, we're going to be able to prevent them from doing so.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pat, let's reflect on how we lost leverage against China vis-a-vis North Korea, and how we could perhaps regain some leverage, knowing that without China, North Korea couldn't do what North Korea is doing. They, you know, they are the, many just say they're the puppet of China in many ways. And so we did this World Trade Organization deal, and Bill Clinton and Alan Greenspan and all these Republicans were all excited because there's going to be a new era of trade with China. China became more powerful year after year. We saw that over the last 8 years of Obama, from 2009 to 2016, China gained in strength, military, technological strength, weapons in space, all the advances they've made. And now we're sitting here having to, I guess, perhaps tolerate a real nuclear North Korea. And we're either not going to exercise our remaining leverage against China, or we can't. Or, you know, I mean, we help create this dynamic by enriching China and isolating Russia, as Victor Davis Hanson just said on the show.
You know, you are exactly right. The United States and the Republican Party in particular, in the 1990s, when some of us were arguing, look, MF, do not give them MFN, do not let them build up these trade surpluses. China is running an annual trade surplus in goods somewhere between $400 and $500 billion a year with the United States. They've gone from the size of Italy's economy at the turn of the century to an economy that is as big as the United States, and their manufacturing base is larger, and that's being translated into military power, naval power, air power, nuclear power, and also a foreign policy of expansionism all through Asia and the One Belt, One Road strategy all the way into Central Asia and toward Europe. And but here's where you are correct also, and that is that China does have the ability basically to strangle North Korea to death in terms of oil and in terms of not buying its coal and its exports, and secondly, in terms of not allowing imports or exports to go into North Korea. They would risk the bringing down the North Korean regime. They would really imperil it. But I believe this. China is playing a game here. They are getting the benefit of North Korea's threats and its building of nuclear weapons, because those threats are forcing South Korea to say, look, are the Americans going to protect us? The Americans are nervous themselves. Are they going to protect us? So North Korea is driving a wedge between South Korea and the United States. It's also pushing a lot of folks in the United States to say, you know, get our troops off that peninsula, move them offshore. And so North Korea, in a way, is doing the work of China. At the same time, China does not want, I don't believe, China wants a war. So they're playing a very touchy game here, and they're playing it very well. But the truth is that Trump is correct here. The Chinese could squeeze North Korea to death. I don't believe they want to. I don't believe they will.
No, we already would have.
They're using them as a cat's paw.
Right. You could say they're the puppet. They're a convenient wedge, and it's very useful to China to have America mired in another conflict, whether we're on the brink of the conflict or we actually get into a horrific military, military struggle. China doesn't fire a shot year after year after year. They don't have any of these wars that we have, and they get stronger and stronger and stronger. All they do is focus on the home front, expanding their influence. And is there any scenario, Pat, where you think China could come in and say, "Okay, guys, we're not going to tolerate this"? But we have our own conditions. These are the conditions that we have.
Well, the question is, you're exactly right. I mean, look at all these crazed Middle East wars we're in. The Chinese just observe that and stay out. They're build up their strength. The Americans have been fighting, what, 6-7 countries, if you throw in Somalia and the others, in the last 15 years. We're all bogged down there. But here's the thing. The Chinese, I think, believe, and I believe correctly, that in the longer term, just as they've grown from the size of Italy to the size of the United States in 17 years, the future belongs to them if they stay out of a war with the United States, the kind of war between the two greatest powers that Germany and Britain failed to stay out of in the first half of the 20th century. So at the same time, I think they want to maintain North Korea. But I tell you, the game goes to the point where there is a possibility of a real war, which could very quickly go nuclear, whether the North Koreans got missiles that can reach us or not. I mean, I can't believe North Korea would go down fighting without using everything in its arsenal, including nuclear weapons. The Chinese got to ask themselves, do they really want something like that to occur right next door to them and have the Korean Peninsula just on fire and millions of refugees and the whole world divided between China and the United States? I think the Chinese would like the current situation to continue on with the U.S. distracted and problems here and the U.S.
What I'm saying is, couldn't they broker the peace or a tolerable peace?
I don't know that they can. I think that unless the North Koreans are faking it, they've been very insulting to China. Kim Jong-un, to my understanding, has never visited China. He's been in power 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Never visited there. They realize they've got a problem child on their hands with nuclear weapons. And it's a tough situation to manage. But they've been managing it well.
We're not gonna have an Incheon landing. I can tell you that.
We're not gonna be back to
Chosin Reservoir. That's not how this war is gonna be fought, you know, my friends. I mean, surrogate dad, Chuck Carlson, fought in the Korean War, and I can't wait to talk to him because he's like, okay, let me tell you how it really was. So now he's feeling this idea that we're gonna be fighting this romantic war. That's over. That is not going to happen. Pat, I got to ask you about this. There seems to be a big squeeze on against Steve Bannon once again in the West Wing. We got the Wall Street Journal editorial board globalists now pushing up against Bannon because they say Bannon wants McMaster out because McMaster is really aligned with, you know, the George Soros types, and he's purged a lot of the nationalists out of the National Security Council. What is your sense about Bannon? If for any reason Bannon leaves this White House, what becomes of the America First, Make America Great Again agenda of Donald Trump, especially with a populist tilt?
Well, the economic nationalism, I think that would go pretty much out the window. And I think Trump is very committed to border control when he realizes, I think, that is indispensable to his, you know, political survival and reelection. But I would be concerned about the foreign policy interventionism, quite frankly, if Bannon were thrown out. But the fact, I haven't read the Wall Street Journal today, I got up a little late, but I think that it's also a sign that Bannon must be influential if their Wall Street Journal is clawing the walls.
Well, they're trying to save that McMaster who was
one of their favorites is in trouble.
Yeah, they gotta save the globalist over at the NSC. They gotta save him and throw Bannon out. But I'm telling you, Bannon goes, and I agree with you. And I know Trump doesn't like to hear this. You gotta stay with him.
You gotta be loyal to your people. You gotta be loyal to people.
Trump's not known for loyalty to his staff. He praises them one day and then he says, well, he's a good man. The next makes him walk out in the rain.
And you need Bannon's voice in there. Quite frankly, he is the custodian of the populist conservative.
Well, I won without Bannon.
The traditionalist ideas, which are more than half of Trump's coalition, and also they're the critical element that got him elected.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Bannon better not be going anywhere. McMaster, I'm not worried about him one way or another. He should probably move on to.
You can get some new generals.
My generals. We can move on to other generals who probably don't have any past with Soros related entities. That would be a good thing. Pat Buchanan, always great to talk to you. Thanks for your perspective, historical and otherwise political. We'll check back with you soon. We'll take a break. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.